Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hockey fans. Welcome to a jam-packed episode of the Vegas Hockey Podcast. There's so much going on between last night and tonight and earlier in the week. The offseason moves are heating up. The Golden Knights take Peyton Krebs, number 17 overall, with a caveat. We're going to get into that. They just made a trade into the second round. We're going to get into all of it. We'll be right back. All right, hockey fans, thank you once again for joining us on this Saturday edition of the Vegas Hockey Podcast. There's a lot going on. The off season is in full swing. The Vegas Golden Knights just made a trade in the second round. They gave their 48th pick and their 82nd pick to move up to 41, taking, and I'm a butcher it probably, Caden Korchak. That's what I'm going to go with right now. It just happened. The trade, oddly enough, was with the San Jose Sharks. The 17th overall pick last night, Peyton Krebs, generally considered a top 10 talent. We'll get into that. Lots going on, Chris. Good day to you, sir.
Yeah, good day to you. It was interesting following the draft last night. A number of few interesting things, few surprises. We'll get into that in the next segment. So going down the Vegas lane, there they were at 17. Spencer Knight's off the board. Cam York's off the board. And, you know, when you think of Vegas, you think they're strong at center, which they are. But Peyton Krebs is just, in my opinion, too good to pass up. So if you remember from our mock draft show last week, I took him at 9 with Anaheim. And, again, from my research, this is, you know, what they said about him. First-line talent, but fourth-line work ethic. You know, a skilled forward,
right.
Great puck skills, speed, skill, hockey IQ, great motor, leadership qualities, and go on and on. So this was, you know, we were texting while the draft was going on, and once it was picked, I said, well, Vegas got a top-10, top-10 talent at number 17. And then, lo and behold, like 2 minutes later, George McPhee's being interviewed and said, well, we got a top-10 player at number 17. I'm like, wait a minute. But, anywho, look, Fasney is going to be 34 in December. And remember, he signed just a 3-year deal. So he's got 2 more years to go. Clearly, William Carlson looks like he's going to be here for a while. And you have Cody Glass. There's your, you know, top 2 centers. A couple of years' time, you can ease Peyton Krebs maybe 2-3 years' time onto this roster as the third-line center. He could be wind up becoming a trade chip, a big trade chip down the line. I know there, you know, obviously the Achilles injury that he had. I don't think in this day and age, you know, look, there was some serious if the Knights were extremely worried about it, although McPhee did mention that there was a little bit of a risk involved, and in the interview on the NBC network there, if there was any serious hesitation, they would have went in another direction. But to me, this was a home run to get that kind of player at 17. You got to be smiling if that's your team and you get that kind of talent pulls to you. And, you know, last thing before I bring it over to you, you know, it was just, I think, three, four years ago, you know, Matt Barzal hurt his knee. He had an injury during the year. It affected his draft stock. He probably should have went in the top 10. He was on the board at 16 when the Islanders took him. So sometimes, you know, an unfortunate thing like that can wind up being another team's gain in the long term.
Yeah, for sure. And I was reading an article from Sinbin.Vegas this morning. They got in touch with an orthopedic surgeon and kind of queried him about the type of injury that he suffered. He was cut by a skate blade through his cut-proof sock, oddly enough, training 2 weeks ago. And he's already putting weight on it, walking with a limp, obviously, to the stage. But then, you know, after that, he was on a scooter backstage. But some quotes from that article. Go to finbin.vegas and read the article, Vegas fans, if you're interested in the full thing. But I'll throw some quotes out of that. It's way better to happen with a cut or a laceration. If it gets cut clean, that means the two ends of the tendon prior to the injury were healthy. You assume it was healthy because of his age, and the cut was higher up because the skate generally protects the lower part of the tendon where these more severe injuries tend to happen. And the comparables he used were Kevin Durant and Richard Sherman. That was what he called acute on chronic injury, where you had generally wear and tear and long-term damage to the tendon, and then an acute tear to it where the ends of the injury were already frayed and damaged. If the skate cut is clean, it's the best case scenario, obviously. The quote is, that's about as optimistic as you can have. All the numbers that you would read about Achilles return to sport, those are totally different injuries than what we see here. Going through the article right now. That's pretty much it. So if you have a part, and it's a partial cut, obviously not a total tear or slice through of the tendon. So, you know, no one has that medical report, but the reports were that obviously development camp is out of the picture. Training camp is probably off the table, but not completely, depending on how well it heals. So certainly by late fall, early winter, he should be rejoining his team. And that's good news. That, like you said, Chris, they got a top 10 talent at 17. That's George McPhee and also Chris Lisa's quote on the deal. You mentioned the center pipeline there with the Vegas Golden Knights, and obviously Carlson reported Pierre LeBrun yesterday that Vegas and William Carlson are getting close on a long-term deal. He expects that to be done, which is good news. And it might be why we're not seeing so many moves out of the Vegas Golden Knights camp as we expected, trying to clear cap space. They do have a window here to finalize that contract before July 1st. And then they know exactly, you know, how much room they're going to need, and maybe let that dictate who gets moved rather than try and move out a bunch of players to create a bulk of cap space, then get into negotiations. So that looks like it's getting taken care of. And like you mentioned, you know, hypothetically, if Cody Eakin gets moves this year and Cody Glass impresses at camp, I think he has a real good shot of making the team out of training camp. And he gets his feet wet in the NHL as a third line center. In, you know, a couple years' time, he can slot into the second line role behind Carlson, because he is a dynamic playmaker, passer, offensively skilled player with great on ice vision and instincts. And Peyton Krebs, I was watching some of his YouTube highlights this morning, and obviously, you know, it's a highlight video, so you're looking at the best he is. But he came down on the right wing and just executed the silky smooth spinorama backhand flips off across crease backdoor goal that was just amazing. But what they say, and I'm on eliteprospects.com for these notes, potent producer and offensive catalyst, rises to the occasion whenever he's on the ice, smooth, shifty skater, traverses all three zones with ease and closes the gap on the back check quickly. Defensively, his understanding of the game communicates itself through his proactive positioning and an active lane disrupting stick. You figure he'll learn a little bit more playing with Mark Stone, who has the best stick in the league on that. Not afraid to go to the dirty areas and fight for the puck. So the 200-foot player, compete level, work ethic, like you said. It seems to be, if he reaches his potential there, Peyton Krebs could slot in at a very high-end third-line center behind Carlson Glass. And if you add add Krebs to the depth at center in, you know, 3 years' time, man, that looks pretty good down the road, sir.
Yeah, I mean, and kudos to Vegas in a very short period of time, obviously. Having the depth in their organization, both on the main roster and the pipeline, that they, you know, can be in a good, you know, some teams might be scared off saying, oh, boy, we're going to have to wait a little bit longer for this guy, and we don't have that time to wait. And, you know, this remember, the draft is an investment. So I'm not saying you're going to have to wait years and years and years upon Peyton Krebs, but you're going to have to wait a little bit longer given the situation. But, again, to get that kind of talent, you take the talent. And definitely for two, I was actually kind of hoping that Lou Lamoriello was on the phone with George McPhee because the Islanders really could use some center depth in their organization. But anyway, I got a scouting report on Kaden Korecic, the D-man that they took at 41. He's 6'3", 192 pounds, considered a defensive defenseman, elite skater with size and defensive ability. He's the kind of guy you're going to want on the ice to kill the penalties. The guy that are on the ice late in the third period to protect a one-goal lead. He's a minutes eater. Been called the safe pick. Projects as long-term solid D-man. So, you know, not sexy, but effective is probably how I would describe him. So, and, you know, of course, you know, a lot of times the prospects, both, you know, plus or minus, you know, sometimes, you know, guys can get better, you know, you know, just because they're drafted and that's their scouting report doesn't mean they can't get better than that. So, you know, a nice pickup to their arsenal. Obviously, they liked him a lot because they traded up a few spots and gave up one of their three third-round picks, I believe. So, so that's like I said, it was an interesting night for the Knights between, you know, or yes, it was an interesting day and between the Carlson news and or pending news, if you will. Sounds like it's in the red zone. Oh, it's probably on the goal line. So hopefully we'll get good news on that in the next day or two, or even maybe later today.
Yeah, for sure. A couple more quotes on Korecic. The body to match the style, and he loves to physically engage opposing forwards. That's from McKean's Hockey. Skates very well for his size, occasionally demonstrating the ability to take the puck end-to-end with impressive speed. That's hockeyprospects.com. And a defensive defenseman who can eat up a lot of ice time and add secondary offense. That is from futureconsiderations.com. Also on the U18 Canada team last year with the Kelowna Rockets, 68 games, 4 goals, 29 assists, 64 penalty minutes. And since this happened like 15 minutes ago, that's about all I got on Mr. Korecic. Welcome to the Vegas Golden Knights to both Peyton Krebs and Kaden Korecic and the rest of the draftees, yet to come this afternoon. The Carlson thing, we pretty much covered. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, now it's just so be curious to see after when Hayes got, you know, what's William Carlson. You got to figure it's going to be
goodness
in that
gracious
neighborhood, but I don't want to go too crazy. But I mean, William Carlson's a lot better player than Kevin Hayes. So,
right?
yeah, I would think so. Yeah.
We talked a little bit about how the Skinner signing could affect the Carlson negotiations. And, you know, LeBron tweeted out yesterday that Carlson was getting close on his deal. So it doesn't look too much like the Kevin Hayes signing is going to look. Kevin got 9+, right?
No, he got 7.1 for 7 years.
7.1.
So he got $50 million for 7 years.
Just on comparables, if William Carlson was on the open market and that was the market,
I keep in mind Vegas can give Carlson an eighth year, so maybe
for sure.
That could
for sure
he could ease the you know, look, the number is going to be around probably $7 million per, but maybe they can get it, you know, a little less than that because they give him an 8th year.
8 year, 56?
But also, he's a year away from unrestricted free agency, so that's something to keep in mind as well. He's not a free – Kevin Hayes basically hit free agency, unrestricted free agency. So he got to that line. So, you know, when you get to that line, you put yourself in a situation where something like this can happen.
So we're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 years, 56, something like that for William
Carlson?
I
would think so. Yeah, I would think so. I would maybe a little bit less because he is a year away from free agency and, you know, he really wants to stay here and, you know, there's no state tax, so that helps a little bit. But I would think, you know, somewhere around, it's going to be at least, it's either going to be 7 or 8 years. And my guess is the number is going to be between 6.75 and 7.5. So
I think that's reasonable. And that's,
yeah.
I got to say, that's probably, if he was on the open market, that's probably about $1.5 million, $2 million a year hometown discount, right?
Yeah, no, if he was on the open market, he would at least get 8. But again, like I said, he's not, and he's a year away. And, you know, and the other side of the coin is if he, you know, he had a good year this year. Clearly, 2 years ago, he had a great year. This year, he had a good year. If he were to take a small step back from this year, well, that would be 2 years in a row that he took a small step back, and then maybe he's not looking at that kind of contract. So, you know, when the money's on the table, when the contract is signed, that money is guaranteed. So there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I was talking this week and around the water cooler at break time, and the question was, I hope William Carlson stays. Like, guys, William Carlson isn't going anywhere. The worst case scenario is they go to arbitration this year because he's a 26-year-old RFA and he has the arbitration rights this year. And the arbitrator gives him whatever he gives him and they have to sign him to the one-year deal there or give him his outright release. Well, we know that wasn't going to happen. So William Carlson was going to be playing hockey in Las Vegas next season regardless. And then if it had gone to that point, which, you know, we don't know, it still might, then you have all season to work on cap space to restructure it for next year when he would be hitting UFA status. And you still have that 8th year, like you said, Chris. So there wasn't really any way that Carlson was going anywhere. He loves Vegas. He wants to be here, and it's good to see LeBron reporting that those talks are getting closer. That's actually the first I had heard of anything regarding those negotiations. So that's good news for Vegas fans.
Yeah, why don't we jump into the draft from last night and hit a couple of highlights. So
well, one more thing, Chris. One more thing.
Oh, yeah, sure.
We had reports, and we have talked about this before, and it's still kind of unclear what kind of relief David Clarkson on the long-term injured reserve list or trading him does until the season starts and how that affects cap space. But the reports came out that Vegas asked for and received David Clarkson's no-trade list, which we said in the past ought to be a blank page. Turn it into here's the teams I won't be traded to, and he gives them a blank sheet of paper. that should be the no trade list for David Clarkson, but apparently there were teams on that no trade list, assuming that they would be high tax rate states. That I would imagine if I was David Clarkson and it was that situation, I'd have Anaheim, LA, and San Jose on that list because I'm not paying California state tax. Probably a few of the Canadian teams because the Canadian tax rates up there get pretty steep when you get into that kind of money. But yeah, interesting that they asked for, and then David Clarkson did turn in that sheet. So if they can just outright trade that contract,
well,
then we know there's $5 million in cap space.
I hate to rain on any possibility on that parade. But with, and we'll get into this into the third segment, with Patrick Marleau moving today, basically to getting traded to Carolina to take that cap number off their hands. The Leafs in cap crunch hell. And basically, Carolina's going to buy out Marleau, making him a free agent. I don't know if he's going to retire or sign a small deal with San Jose. He basically said he was either going to stay in Toronto or go to San Jose, or that was it. But the cost of taking that number, which was a cap hit of 6.25, with an actual salary of only $1 million, was a first-round pick next year. So, if, you know, Carlson has a slightly smaller cap number. I think it's 5.25.
I believe you're
however,
right.
However, his actual payroll is a lot higher. I think it's around higher than Marleau. I think it's around $4 million or so. So if George McPhee is going to call around to the teams who have a lot of cap space who are rebuilding and that's not on his no-trade list, they're going to say, well, wait a minute, Carolina got a first-round pick. We got to start talking there at minimum. So I think that kind of – we'll see. Maybe George can work his magic, but I would think that whatever possibility that had, I would put it from doubtful to remote.
Based on the Marleau deal.
Based on the
Marleau
deal.
And the market that that's at. Yeah, no, that's a good point, Chris. Now, maybe you retain – the actual salary portion, part of it, and
yeah, I don't know how all that semantics work. Like,
right. So you might Vegas, if they want to trade him, might have to give. Let's say they want to retain half of that, and then you drop
right.
that value down
maybe,
to a second
yeah,
or a
so
third, and they have
right.
a surplus of that coming in the next couple of years. So
yeah,
I mean,
that's a possibility.
It's still
maybe
a possibility, and.
You take half the contract, you half the cap hit,
you know,
that kind of thing, and you know, and you're talking about second and third round picks, or you know,
that's
or second
doable.
Or third, or yeah. So we'll see, but in terms of taking,
yep, $3 million. That may save a Cody Eakin or a Colin Miller from having to be moved, depending on what the Carlson contract ends up being. So that you know, if you're saving $2.25 million.
It all adds up.
Yes, sir. And it could bring Pierre-Edouard Belmar back. It could give Derek England another year in the fold. So that it could be, I mean, that could still be a valuable piece that might save the Golden Knights from having to move a player off the roster.
Right. They're going to have to move players off the roster. The thing is, even if they could get someone to take 50% of that cap hit, it could mean the difference of moving one less player off the roster.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
something
anyway,
to keep an eye on.
Something to keep an eye on for sure. Obviously, they extra that list, so it's a possibility. Jumping into the draft, just, you know, obviously want to hit about five highlights. Let's start with the first shocker at 6, Detroit. We knew they wanted defense. We knew that they had a lot of talented young forwards both on the main roster and in the pipeline, but no one had Detroit taking a defenseman there. I would dare to say that if almost any other general manager other than Steve Yzerman made this pick, he would have been roasted. You know, taking the big German defenseman, Moritz Seider. Now, this is a guy that could have went anywhere, you know, between 11 and 20, so it's not like he went completely nuts off the board. But, you know, anytime someone does this and it's a need, a pick, if it's a position of severe need, you think of, you know, someone who's reaching. But a big kid, 6'4", 183 pounds, he will, you know, he's mobile, good instincts, great frame, rough around the edges, which a lot of people, you know, bigger guys, it takes a little bit more. I like this quote, an athletic piece of clay just waiting to be molded into a work of art. So it was funny when he was drafted and they show the camera on him, he was shocked, you know. So,
yeah, and his family too, right?
yeah. So good for him. I mean, like I said, you know, for people who want to criticize the pick, I get it. But at the same token, I would say, you know what, not that he can't make mistakes, but Steve Yzerman has made a lot more good decisions than he's been right a lot more than wrong. So I can't imagine that he would do a reach pick at the sixth spot.
Well, he's the sixth overall European skater and the fourth overall European defenseman ranked on NHL.com prior to the draft. And you had Victor Soderstrom, Ville Heinola, and Philip Broberg, who I believe all three of those guys went in the teens. I thought Broberg
was... Broberg actually went eight. He went in the top ten.
Right. He was the next defenseman off the board. But the thing that he's kind of similar size-wise, Sider has about 8 pounds officially on Broberg, but both those players are 6'3". The other two ranked higher were 6 foot 178, 6 foot 182, probably more skill and speed and puck moving style defenseman. So, you know, Stevie Wise going for size and physicality, I would assume, to bulk up that back end in a couple of years. Yeah. You know, you got to go with the "in Stevie we trust," right? At that. But we were texting and we were both like, huh? What? Excuse me. Certainly they, you gotta believe. We talked in our draft special last week about Detroit trying to possibly move up to that three spot and take the defenseman, Bowen Byram. And obviously that didn't happen. So I guess, you know, you know what they say. It only takes one team to believe in you to get you drafted. And obviously on the Red Wings board, he was their number two defenseman.
And I'll throw one positive for, and everyone knows we're big fans of Russ Cohen, Sportsology, at Sportsology, Sportsology.com, who just lives and breathes the draft.
Yes, sir.
Russ had Sider on number nine on his board, overall board. So, and you know, the way Russ does it is he just ranks up. He doesn't do a mock draft. He takes the prospects and he's like, okay, here's my top 31. You know, I'm looking at in a vacuum. So he had Sider at nine. So, you know, if you talk to Russ,
not that big a reach.
Probably would tell you not that big of a reach. So, and now this, that was one of three points I want to hit on in terms of players and then two overall themes. So the second point on the player is Spencer Knight, who we thought might be on the board when Vegas picked. In the recent days, it got a little bit more dicey. I was reading in different places about Florida taking him. And look, I'm not criticizing the pick. I like Spencer Knight a lot. Basically, he's fundamentally sound with athleticism up the wazoo. A great kid, and it sounds like, the way they were talking on the telecast last night, he's not going to take years and years to develop, which usually when you take a goalie, takes a little bit longer. Here's my point, though. At the 13th spot, with a franchise looking to get better now, that has very little defense, both on the main roster and really not much in the pipeline, it makes zero sense to me to take Spencer Knight at 13, and then on July 1st, signed Bobrovsky to a 7-year deal. So, to me, if you take Spencer Knight at 13, you're not signing any goaltender or trading for any goaltender for the next 7 years. Those two things make no sense to me. So, we'll see how that plays out. We'll talk about that on our free agency show. We should know by then what Florida does. They clearly need a number one goalie. But that would be my only point about them taking Spencer. To me, if you take Spencer Knight at 13, that means I'm not signing Bobrovsky. But I don't know if they're going to do that. I don't think that may not be their mindset whatsoever.
No, I mean, I agree with you, unless you just are building that pipeline. It doesn't make sense, especially with, like you said, with the defensemen that were still on the board. you could have got a really nice piece. I'm scrolling through it right now. Cam York was still there, right? He went 14 to the Flyers, one pick later.
He did.
Right?
He did.
And then Thomas
he
Harley.
Did.
And hey, shout out to Thomas Harley. It's got to suck being on your draft day and having the team that picks you switch your first and last name when they call out your name. Did you catch that?
I did. That was terrible.
My goodness gracious.
Terrible.
For that dude to come up and just look at Harley Thomas and just, you know, if I'm Thomas Harley, I almost did the same thing. If I'm Thomas Harley, I'm going to school for 4 years and going to free agency. I'm never signing with a team that can't get my name right on my draft day. Oh, my goodness. The look on that kid's face and family was just horrible to watch. Shame on you, Dallas. Shame.
Second time this year, the Dallas Stars owner put their foot in their mouth.
And goodness gracious.
Made a foolish move.
Anyway.
I mean, this one, you know, anyway.
Man.
Yeah, exactly.
In your head, you're like, oh, they really, really wanted me, huh? They don't even know my name? Oh, man. I'm going to school, and I'm going to, you know, if you stay in school 4 years and you get out, we saw the, you know, Jimmy Vesey and Jimmy Schultz for the Knights and a few others just stay in school there 4 years and then hit free agency. I would never put on a Dallas Stars jersey again if I'm that kid.
And then the third thing on the player, Cole Caulfield, sliding a bit. It seemed everywhere you read that if Buffalo wasn't going to take him at 7, which in recent days a lot of people thought they would, he wasn't going to get past Edmonton. I know Mark Scheiger said that when we did our mock draft last week.
Right.
Fell all the way to 15 for the Canadiens, and I get it. He's 5'7¼". But, you know, the kid's talent, the way the game has changed in terms of players of that ilk. Talk to Alex DeBrincat. I think it could be a potential steal for Montreal at 15.
I hate that for the kid because, I mean, and you can't fault the Sabres. Dylan Cousins was still on the board, and
yep.
A lot of people thought he might be gone. Turcotte went to the Kings. The Avalanche had Bo and Byram fall in their laps, right, after Kirby Dach was the second center off the board to Chicago. So you know the Kings were going to take Turcotte when he was available. The Red Wings, we talked about the Moritz Seider pick. And so with Dylan Cousins, you know Sabres, you know, they fell in his lap. No one's going to fault the Oilers for taking the next best defenseman. Everyone, you know, the Oilers need help on the blue line. So you take the defenseman there and, you know, all the other teams, you know, they're pretty much looking forward until you get to Montreal. Flyers did snatch up Cam York, which a lot of people were surprised at considering their youth on the blue line. When they picked Caulfield, I kind of felt bad for the kid because you know the microscope that the Montreal media market is. And he's, because of his size, he's going to be just under the microscope. His whole career, finishing juniors, going to the A, you know, and if he doesn't make it, it's going to be a wasted pick on a little player. And again, you know what I mean? I think there would have been a much more comfortable situation for him in just about any other market. So good luck to Cole Caulfield. I hope he goes there and just lights it up. But it's hard enough being as successful as he is when, you know, the first question everybody asked him last night was, despite your size, how are you? You know what I mean? And he's got to be sick of hearing about that. And now that's probably all he's going to hear about, especially if he struggles and takes a couple years, 3 years to adjust to the more physical style play in the pro leagues. It's all he's going to hear about. And that's, you know, the pressure that comes with playing in Montreal, you know, good luck to Cole Caulfield. I hope he goes up there and lights it up.
And then the last two quick hits, overall theme, 9 Americans taken in round 1.
USA.
And only one trade. A lot of people thought there was going to be a lot of wheeling and dealing. Ironically, what went to put a bow on what you just said about Caulfield, it was Arizona trading up to the Flyers spot from 14 to 11. I thought, well, here you go. They're going to take Caulfield.
Right.
They took a defenseman. So, so only one trade and 9 Americans taken on in round 1. And if I could throw in a personal note, 2 Long Island guys taken within the first 10 or 12 picks in round 2. In fact, the first player off the board today in round 2, Shane Pinto, a center, is a Nassau County guy where I reside. So a few picks later, another forward went that kid went to Ottawa. The other kid went to Detroit at 54. So, so in terms of an overall theme for the draft.
USA Rising, sir. Out of those 9 players, 7 of the first 14 American players out of the U.S. National Development Program. So, man, what a club that was to put 7 of their players in the first 14 picks in the NHL draft. We talked about that with Russ Cohen when we were talking with him last, the rise of the American born player and the impact that they're going to have in the National Hockey League and some of the changes that they did in scheduling, some AHL teams and high ranked colleges to play against, certainly helped the development of these youngsters. And yeah, USA Rising, sir. That was my main takeaway in the first 14 picks were 7 of them come out of that program. That's outstanding.
All right. Well, we got a lot to get to in the moves, including 3 from today. So let's each try to give a thought on each one. Big trade this morning. PK Subban leaves, traded from Nashville to the Devils for 2 young players, neither one considered a top prospect of that or a top young player. Basically, the meat of the deal for Nashville was getting 2 second-round picks, one of which was the 3rd pick in today's draft, which they traded out of. Jersey retains the whole salary cap hit of $9 million. So Jersey clearly trying to get better now, maybe also trying to convince Taylor Hall to sign a long-term extension. Clearly not a bad 16 hours if you're the Jersey Devils. You had a frontline center in Jack Hughes, and you had a frontline defenseman in PK Subban. And it opens up the door for Nashville in terms of cap space to sign a Matt Duchene.
Yeah, absolutely. There were earlier reports this morning that the Preds in Toronto were close on that Subban deal, and I don't see how they could add $9 million in salary when the Mitch Marner situation is going on. That maybe there was a retained salary there, and New Jersey called and said, "Hey, we'll take the whole thing. Here's a couple seconds. Let's go."
Yep.
But yeah, New Jersey clearly doing what they can to become more competitive, hoping to entice Taylor Hall to stick around. They had the cap space to make that deal. PK Subban,
yep,
obviously should, and this is weird because Nashville's power play was abysmal, but I think PK Subban can help their power play running point. I think, you know, he's always a popular player with the fans and in the community with the cities. Definitely Nashville, the fan base there really liked PK Subban. So, good move on the PR front. We'll see if it can entice Taylor Hall to
mm-hmm.
stick around and sign a long-term deal there.
Yeah, and then domino number 2 from today, Patrick Marleau, mentioned before, gets traded to Carolina. Obviously, he had to okay the deal. He had a full no-move clause. 1 year to go, $6.25 million cap hit, only $1 million in salary. Carolina's going to buy him out, making him a free agent. So We'll see if he winds up resigning in San Jose for a minimal amount, if he retired. He basically said, I'm going to play my last year in Toronto, or you could trade me to San Jose, or that's it. Let's see if he sticks to that. The call, it's great for Toronto to clear out that $6.25 million cap hit, which they desperately need. It's a big number. It came at a huge cost. To trade next year's first-round pick already with only 1 year to go. I mean, keep in mind, we've seen these kind of trades the last few years with Arizona, with Carolina, with New Jersey. Teams taking on a bad cap number. Vegas did it with David Clarkson at the expansion draft. Well, that was basically a trade. But what the teams got in return of taking on that bad cap number were a combination of second-round picks, not to poo-poo second-round picks, but second-round picks, really good prospects or really good young players. They did not get a primo chip like a first-round pick. So it came at a very, in my opinion, at a very high cost. Look, remember the movie Argo, where they before they put their plan in action, the guy they have to get the approval from and says, is this a good idea? And Ben Affleck and Bryan Cranston says, there are no good ideas.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
This is the best of all the bad ideas.
Nice
and that's
pull,
the position, sir. Yeah, and that's the position Toronto was in with their cap. It will, you know, hope for their sake, alleviate trying to eliminate guys that they will lose because of having to sign the Marners, the Capitans, and so on, especially Marner. And then improving the defense at the same time.
Yeah, well, there was a report that ownership wants to meet with Patrick Marleau to see if they can get him to play, and if not, they'll buy him out. I saw that just
right.
Not too long ago. But like you said, we'll see if he sticks to his guns and forces the buyout. Steep price. Toronto gave up their first-round pick this year for Jake Muzzin, and now it says conditional first-round pick on it. I haven't seen those conditions yet.
You got to figure it's probably like top three protected in case like the sky
the
fell.
Bomb falls out.
You know, yeah. And, you know, God forbid something crazy happened. They just missed the playoffs, and then they won the lottery, you know, just to protect themselves. I think it's
okay.
That kind of a scenario, kind of.
But
thing.
Yeah, so now they give up their first round pick next year too. Just, I mean, that tells you how big an asset cap space is in the National Hockey League that you're willing to throw a first round pick basically away in order to buy $6 million in cap space. I mean, it's basically what they did. So,
consider this, Mark. Your Kings traded Jake Muzzin for two good prospects and the Leafs first-round pick this year. I would say that in terms of value, what the Kings got for Muzzin, this is just my opinion, probably about 80% of that value was that first-round pick. And
sure.
So the Leafs got a second pairing D for the rest of this past year and next year, at a reasonable cap number, no less, at $4 million. So to put into perspective of the value of a first-round pick, even if it's in the latter third of the draft, to get someone to take that Marleau hit for you shows you how high of a price that was.
Yeah, no question at all. And the Kings used that pick to take the Swedish defenseman Tobias Bjornfoot,
yes,
who is really highly regarded. He was ranked as a higher skater than Seiden, who went number six to the Red Wings. So that becomes a valuable chip back to the Kings. And I just saw with the second pick in the second round, number 33 overall, the Kings picked up another, they picked up Arthur Kaliev, who was many people thought was going to be a first rounder too. So three of the first 33 picks for the Kings, and they did a good job on all three.
I agree. And then finally, JT Miller, cap casualty out of from Tampa Bay, goes to Vancouver. They get a young goalie. They get a goalie. They get a third round pick in this draft. And it sounds like that's Tampa Bay. And it sounds like Tampa Bay gets a conditional first round pick over the next year or two. I don't know those details. So, you know, Vancouver making a push to get better, try to get in the top three in the Pacific. Add a good score, a top six winger in JT Miller. Tampa Bay gets 5.25 of cap relief. So we knew Miller was going. It was just a question of where.
Yeah, were you watching the coverage when that happened? I was not. I'm curious to see what Vancouver's reaction was to that trade.
It seemed like it was a little mixed. I think they were happy to get Miller. It wasn't anti-Miller. But when they heard what happened was when they announced it at the podium right after the draft started today, so they started to announce what Vancouver was giving up first. So when they said a conditional first-round pick, again, going back to the value of a first-round pick, and keep in mind, Vancouver picked 10th overall this year. So they're not guaranteed, you know, it's no guarantee that pick's not going to be in the lottery next year or the year after. So when they said a conditional first-round pick, everyone kind of held their breath a bit. So we'll have to see what those conditions are in terms of, you know, Miller. I don't know if it's Miller's health or if it's top 10 protected or things of that nature. So we'll have to see what those conditions are. But JT Miller moving on to the Pacific Northwest. What is your thoughts of giving Erik Karlsson an 8-year deal at 11.5 per? We know he's a super player. As we saw, though, this past season, there's been a lot of miles on that tire. And now you're if you're San Jose at 11.5 per, you're asking 8 more years. I mean, he couldn't even make it through the playoff, even though he only played in 45 games in the regular season. He had trouble at the end of the playoffs. Body is, you know, I know he can get over this injury and hopefully move on, and obviously they must feel that way. But I was a bit surprised.
Here's what I love about the deal. When you put Karlsson in there at 11.5, and you look at Brent Burns, Burns is making 8.
Yeah.
And that's for 6 more years. He's going to be 40 when that deal is up, right?
Oh.
He's already getting blown by on the blue line by speedy teams. His value as a defenseman is almost purely offensive at this point. Then you put Mark Edward Vlasic on there. That's $7 million. And he's tied up for 7 more years. All right? So now I'm looking at...
that's like $27 million.
Right? Right? And all those players will be... So let me add 2 more players to that. We got Logan Couture on the books for 8 years, making $8
million. That's 35.
Then you got Vander Kane. He's got 6 years left. He's making 7.
That's 42.
Okay. That's half the projected space on 5 players.
More
than half, like 81, 81
yeah,
something,
it's,
right?
It's going to fall between 81.5 and 82.
So that's 5 players, more than half your salary cap. And those are
and a lot of them are older.
The shortest deal is 6 years, and every one of them will be 35 before that player's up. Here's part 2 that I really love. After next season, the Sharks have to sign 10 either UFA or RFA players. They've got 5 of each, I believe. Yikes. Is this a win next year and slam the window shut on this version of the San Jose Sharks? because
I'll give him two years, but
well, you
got to
rebuild
like,
the roster. You're gonna have 10
right.
free agents after next season.
Look, they're obviously a really good team, and they're in the
Whoa.
Conversation in terms of, you know, representing the West next year, but they're not the favorite. I mean, there's a bunch of teams in the conversation, and you know, they better win it. If they don't win in the next 2 years, they're going to be paying for it the following years, to say the least. So I was startled by that. But
when Columbus did what they did, at first blush, everyone was, wait, what? What? Huh? And then San Jose Sharks just said, hold my beer. Let me show you how I can mortgage the future of a franchise for real. Wow, I love that deal because, I mean, we've seen what the Parise-Suter contracts did in Minnesota. They have $18 million tied up. Is it 18 or 22? They signed for 9.5 each, I think. 11-year deal.
Who's this?
Parise and Sutter in Minnesota.
Oh yeah, they signed
like nine and a half for 11.
No, I don't think their numbers aren't too. Off the top of my head, I don't think their numbers are that high. It's like for another 8. If you remember, because they went that was above before the change in rules of 8-year max. So they signed like 12, 13-year deals or something crazy. So their numbers, I think, were 7 and change a year, but it's like for the next 8 or 9 years, I think, or something crazy.
Well, we've seen how just having two players can impact what – I'm looking that up right now, Zach Parise. Yeah, 7.5.
But it's for like the next – It's for a lot
yeah,
11
more years. So, and then the Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews deal, they put a window on it, and you know they won the cup in 2015, great, and you get to that point, and the Kings did the same thing by giving Kopitar, Carr, and Quick their deals, and also I mean Drew Doughty at the time for $7 million. And how that what you know when Williams left, and the Mike Richards situation, you see how that impacts a team's ability to maintain that competitiveness when your other free agents start falling off the roster and going somewhere else to get paid because they've been on a championship team, blah blah blah, and you have to replace them with players in the $2 million. To $3.5 million window instead of the $5.5 to $7 million window, and your depth is depleted, and we've seen in the past those kinds of deals totally close windows on clubs, and we can only hope that window closes on San Jose. No disrespect to San Jose, but obviously. The rivalry between the Knights and the Sharks is the hottest between the Knights and any team. And, you know, I love this deal for San Jose for those reasons.
All right, so we got three more items on this list here. One, Jacob Trouba traded to the Rangers for the 20th overall pick, which Winnipeg took, I want to say, a defenseman. They did. They took the kid Villa Hanoi, who seems like a good player. And
right.
Young defenseman Neil Pionk was kind of like a third-pairing guy. I think what happened here, reading through the tea leaves, is there was a very short list that Trouba was willing to sign an extension now with. One of the teams was the Rangers. Another team known was the Red Wings. Now, Trouba's only 25. And if you're the Red Wings, and the question I have is, if you're the Red Wings, and you're trying to build your defense, and isn't Trouba from near the Detroit area, if memory serves correct? I don't have that in front of me, but I thought he
I
could be way off base. Yeah, I could be way off base, but I know it's, again, first round pick, value of a first round pick, said before about the Marlowe deal. I mean, Detroit couldn't beat them. Now, the Rangers are going to have to sign a max deal for Trouba, who's got one more year to go. He's scheduled to become an unrestricted free agent July 1 of 2020. He has arbitration rights. You're probably looking at an 8-year deal at $8 million per. He's coming off his best season, particularly offensively. I mean, I'm sure they'll get that deal done. And it also shows you, and I get it, Winnipeg was trying to win a cup. They got to, you know, the conference finals last year, lost the night. They had high hopes that this could be the year for them. But at the end of the day, in terms of value, again, in a vacuum, they traded Trouba 1 year too late. But I get it. There's a reason why. You know, this wasn't a team that was an 8 seed that got blown out in the first round. So Trouba to the Rangers.
Yeah, Rochester, Michigan, sir. Good call by you on that.
I mean, Detroit. Yeah. Detroit couldn't beat that offer. Now maybe Stevie Wynne likes Trouba, doesn't love him, and you know clearly assets side of what you're giving up. If you're going to give anybody, you know, a max deal, 8 years at $8 million plus per, you better love the player. So maybe at the end of the day, he didn't. Or he's like, I don't, you know, that's not where I want to spend my money. But I'm just saying, I'm just surprised Detroit couldn't beat a complimentary player and the 20th overall pick.
Yeah, oddly enough, they went Seiden in that number 6 pick, who was 6'3", 208.
Right.
Well, Trouba's 6'3", 203. If you're going to go and take the 6th overall pick on a player like that, then certainly you could give someone of a similar ilk and package to bring in a player who's more than proven at the NHL level. I just wonder what went wrong with Trouba in Winnipeg. I think it's more than dollars and cents. I feel like there was some bad blood last year when they were trying to get that 1 year done.
They've had a lot of, you know what, it seems like they've had a lot of contract negotiations. They've done a lot of bridge deals, and not that his side has been easy to deal with. And I think there's been a lot of, if not bad blood, a lot of tough negotiations, and I think that rubbed off, and I think he wanted to move on, even though they have a super squad. I mean, it seems like a great place to play. I don't know. I'm with you, obviously a chance to win. Yeah. So
the Rangers are getting a real good player. That's gonna.
Yeah, they are.
You know that rebuild just got a big piece.
It certainly did, and Lord knows they need it on the blue line. They don't really have much assets on the main roster on the blue line. And ironically, that 20th pick was Winnipeg's slot. They got the Rangers got that pick for trading Kevin Hayes to Winnipeg as a rental, and then so basically, the Rangers flipped Kevin Hayes' rental price and a third pairing defenseman at best for Jacob Trouba.
Yeah, not too bad, huh? Davidson's back in town, sir.
Well, that was the GM. I'm not going to give Davidson that credit. But and now it's a good segue to Kevin Hayes. I mean, I get it. The Flyers targeted him. I get it. They really like him. I get it. He had his best year. But, you know, and I get it, he's a center, and I get it, he's, what, 26, going soon to be 26, young. He's got a lot of good years ahead of him. But, boy, oh, boy, I mean, he's had 1 year more than 50 points, a 7-year deal at $7 million. God bless. I have nothing against the player or the agent. If the team's going to be willing to give it to you.
Sign that.
Hey, God bless. guy, but I tell you what, he better be, he doesn't have to be a superstar, but he better be a 50-plus or 60-point player for the Flyers from the get-go next season. Or, you know, the Flyer faithful can be known to get a little angry at times. That could be a bad look. And obviously, Alain Vigneault, now the coach with Philly, knows him well from his days in New York. And ironically, Vigneault got booted out of the Rangers because they didn't like the way he handled or dealt with or used young players. And so they go to Vigneault in terms of, tell us about Kevin Hayes, and then they give him this really crazy contract. I mean, think about where the Islanders gave Brock Nelson basically, what, a six-year deal at $6 million per, and Hayes is probably a better offensive player than Nelson, even though Nelson almost had the same stats as Hayes. And Nelson, I think, probably has scored more goals than Hayes in the last couple of years, and he's been more consistent than Hayes. But in terms of a two-way player at the center position, and he got 6 for 36, and Hayes, and they're basically the same age. Maybe Brock's a few months older, and Hayes got 7 for 50. That's a crazy contract.
Yeah, and that I was glad to see Pierre Lebrun report that Carlson was getting close, because that's the kind of deal that can screw up a market. And like you said, you don't blame the player or the agent.
No.
You know, that's the kind of deal that lockouts are made of, sir. And I won't be won't be shy about saying it, because when you do that, and you know, most, they're not strikes, okay? They're lockouts. The owners are trying to get a better deal in the collective bargaining agreement to protect themselves from themselves when deals like this are made. If you just look on stats alone and other comparables, Kevin Hayes should be around a $5.5-6 million player. If Nelson was 6 for 6, if you're starting a team and those are the two centers on the board, don't you start with Brock Nelson because of all the other things he does, as opposed to Kevin Hayes, right? I mean, he better still have some offensive upside at one, his career year being 55 points. That's the kind of deal that screws markets up, because if you just go comparable on that Kevin Hayes deal, Carlson coming off two seasons with more points than that. He has a 43 goal season under his belt. I mean, that makes Carlson a $9 million player.
Yeah.
20 more points a year on his career year. Absolutely. If he's willing to take the hometown discount, thank you, Wild Bill. But if I'm the agent, I'm on the phone with William Carlson and go, hey, buddy, we're going for nine. I got comps now. We're going for nine.
And so then the last point, because I got to run, and that's the Anaheim Ducks. Dallas Eakins gets another bite at the apple, and with the future young Anaheim group, and they buy out Corey Perry, who's now going to be a free agent, unrestricted free agent. He can help somebody. I mean, he's not the player he once was, but he can help somebody. So it'll be interesting to see where Corey Perry winds up.
Yeah, Anaheim's finally decided to move on from the Perry-Getzlaff combination, and with Kessler out probably for the whole season, maybe his career's done. He's going to be moved to long-term injured reserve, and so there's cap space there now. That's the sure sign that Anaheim is going to, if not rebuild, then certainly seriously retool and reshape the team. Dallas Eakins, like you said, gets another crack at the apple. He's, you know, real successful, I believe, with the goals with the AHL Western Conference finals this year. Lost to Chicago, but so I mean, kudos to Dallas Eakins. I think he probably deserves another shot in the league, and maybe he learned a little bit. They were talking about it on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider radio show here in Las Vegas this week. And he's admitted in the past that when he had his last chance, he came in and was the my way or the highway guy, and it didn't really work out. So, you know, player relations being what they are nowadays, and you can't really get along too long with the heavy. I mean, look at Tortorella. He's a heavy-handed guy, but he's light years from the guy that he used to be. And is able to kind of, you know, he went to New York and we benched Brad Richardson's in the playoffs and pretty much slandered Brad Richards. We have a better chance to win without him in the lineup in the middle of the playoffs. And I mean, that's about as disrespectful as you can give to a Conn Smythe winner, right? So Tortorella isn't shy about putting his players out there, but he's definitely turned the page on who he used to be, and he's evolved as a coach. And if he can do that and create some relationships, his X's and O's are good. He's obviously a great hockey guy. I think that we need to see if his player relations are better than they were in his last times around. And I think he'll do just fine in Anaheim, but it looks like they've decided to finally turn the page and go into some sort of a retool rebuild mode, as opposed to trying to put patches and pieces in place around the Getzlaf, Perry, Kessel thing. Kessler.
So we got one more show to go, unless something crazy would happen with Vegas over the summer, but we got, and then we'll hop on and do a special show, but one more show to go for this season. We don't have a set date. It won't be next Saturday, because that doesn't make any sense, with next Saturday being June 29th and July 1st being 2 days away. So we got to nail down a day, but we're looking somewhere, you know, the 2nd or the 3rd would be ideal. But we'll reach out to everybody via Twitter and keep everyone abreast of when that show will be done, and then when it'll be up shortly thereafter. And obviously we'll go through all the July 1st signings, all the trades leading up to then, and signings and things. So there'll be a lot to discuss, and I'm sure a lot on that front in terms of what the Vegas moves.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm looking right now with the 79th pick. Golden Knights took Pavel Dorolyev, Magnitogorsk in Russia. And with the 86th pick, they take defenseman Leighton Ahak from Prince George in the British Columbia Hockey League. So there's your updates on the latest picks from the Golden Knights. And we will keep everybody posted when our free agency show is going to be. We might sneak it in. We got to worry about the 4th of July and the holidays coming. We want to get it out before that. But, yeah, we don't want to do it 2 days before free agency. Hopefully there'll be a little more roster certainty between now and then for the Vegas Golden Knights. Are you hearing me, William Carlson? So hopefully we'll get to report on that, and it'll be a pretty good show to wrap up our 5th season as the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Congratulations on that to you, Chris.
And back at you, buddy.
All right. That's going to do it for our episode this week, the Peyton Krebs Show. Thank you, sir. For Chris, I'm Mark, and we'll talk to you soon.